This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Did you know that Puerto Rico teeters on the brink of financial calamity? Probably not. The U.S. territory and the 3.5 million American citizens who live there barely register in our headlines or in our concern. This is how Zika, the virus linked to microcephaly in babies, was discussed as it spread from South and Central America.
We do not believe that there will be a major outbreak of Zika in the United States.
Except it had already hit Puerto Rico, where there have been 40,000 confirmed cases to date, over 3,000 of them pregnant women. But the island often doesn't count, even though it has more residents than 20 U.S. states. However, you may have heard about Puerto Rico this week because they were heading to the polls last Sunday to become one of us.
Just ahead, a major push for Puerto Rico to become the 51st state.
Well, Puerto Rico comes one step closer to becoming a state. The island overwhelmingly voted for statehood with nearly 500,000 votes.
Now that the people have spoken in Puerto Rico, this is something that Congress has to address.
Actually, though, the people of Puerto Rico have not spoken because most of them boycotted Sunday's plebiscite. In a time of desperate economic crisis on the island, there was little appetite for an $8 million non-binding vote, especially since the real power lies with a Republican Congress on the mainland, which is disinclined to accept a broke, Spanish-speaking, Democratic-leaning 51st state. Nevertheless, Puerto Rico is at a crossroads, less about its political status than its very identity. Producer Alana Casanova-Burgess reported this week from the island, where the words and symbols Puerto Ricans use to define themselves are in flux.
On San Jose Street in Old San Juan last weekend, you almost couldn't tell there was about to be an election. Not only because so many Puerto Ricans were going to boycott the vote, but also because selfies were happening.
Did you want a picture of yourself there?
5 years ago, artists took the shabby wooden door of a nearly ruined brick colonial building, and they painted it in the red, white, and blue of the Puerto Rican flag. It became iconic, the stuff of postcards and the background to family photos on the island and for the diaspora. Like for Joel, now of Maryland but formerly of Mayagüez, who arrived to find an austere black and white flag instead.
It's like a symbol of what is going on in Puerto Rico, and for me, it represents a little bit of sadness, a little bit, you know, like desperation.
That's because last summer, the island woke up to a shock. President Obama had just signed the PROMESA Act, which set up a board to supervise Puerto Rico's finances. Facing over $123 billion in debt from bonds and pensions, the island's government said it couldn't pay back bondholders and provide essential services, which had already been slashed after a decade of economic crisis. Carmen Maldonado was visiting from Naranjito in Puerto Rico.
Algunos protestan, algunos no les gusta, pero lo sabe lo que significa.
All Puerto Ricans know what it means. Some like it, some don't, but they all know what it means. A few words about the Puerto Rican flag, the normal one. It is everywhere on the island, hanging from balconies and stuck on bumpers, on bikinis and hats and handkerchiefs, and in diaspora neighborhoods on the mainland. The flag was actually designed in 1895 in New York City by a group of Puerto Rican revolutionaries working with Cubans on a joint push for independence from Spain. There's a famous line from that time by the Puerto Rican poet Lola Rodriguez de Tillo that Cuba and Puerto Rico are two wings of the same bird. And in fact, the red and blue of their flags are inverted. Cuba became independent. Puerto Rico became part of the U.S. in 1898. But from 1948 until 1957, it was actually illegal to fly the flag on the island, and even to own it. The Puerto Rican legislature passed a law that made any discussion of independence, including songs, a crime.
Nosotros queremos la libertad. Nuestros machetes nos la darán.
Around that time, the U.S. relationship with Puerto Rico changed.
There is a saying in Puerto Rico that you have to give someone the chicken wing so that you can eat the chicken breast. Hay que dar del ala para comer de la pechuga. It was a policy of tolerance and concessions in exchange for maintaining a stable colony during the Cold War.
Emilio Pantojas is author of the book Crónicas del Colapso, Chronicles of the Collapse, about the history of the fiscal crisis here. We met on a wet morning last week outside the Capitol building in San Juan, in front of a row of bronze statues of the nine U.S. presidents who have visited Puerto Rico.
We have Obama, Gerald Ford, Lyndon Johnson, John F. Kennedy, Eisenhower, Truman, Roosevelt, and then the other one, Herbert Hoover, and Theodore Roosevelt.
Although Puerto Ricans have been American citizens since 1917, they can only participate in the primaries. They cannot vote for president. And most of the visits memorialized here were short. Some weren't even official.
And Obama came for just a few hours, right?
Yeah, he came for a fundraiser.
And so Pantojas has no love for these statues, but they do help tell a story about how the U.S. has shaped Puerto Rico. He says that coming out of World War II, there was a consensus that decolonization would help avoid another catastrophe. It became a topic of conversation at the Yalta Conference, where Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin met to discuss what would come next for war-torn Europe.
Roosevelt was harassing Churchill to decolonize the British Empire. He also harassed Stalin. And he said, you need to release Poland. And Stalin said, the Soviet Union has been invaded twice during the 20th century, always through the Polish corridor. So what do you want me to do? And then he replied to Roosevelt, and what are you going to do with Puerto Rico? You have a colony. You have to decolonize. Roosevelt was irate. And he said, you know, we have no colony. Puerto Rico is different. But the fact of the matter was that Puerto Rico was a colony. Roosevelt dies, comes Harry S. Truman. The first thing that Truman does is he appoints a Puerto Rican governor, because before 1946, governors were appointed by the United States president, and they were all Americans, white Americans with English names.
The next step was to allow Puerto Ricans to elect their own governors, and then in 1952 to allow them to adopt their own constitution.
And so what you have is a colony by consent.
That was when Puerto Rico was rebranded as a Commonwealth. In Spanish, Commonwealth is known as Estado Libre Asociado, or ELA, ELA, meaning Associated Free State.
Which is not. That's a misnomer.
Because Puerto Rico is neither free nor a state. And in the last year, that's become even clearer, says Gretchen Sierra Zorita, who's with the National Puerto Rican Agenda, which advocates for the island in Washington, D.C.
But, you know, the ELA is kind of like a meaningless word.
Last summer, Puerto Rico was shaken by a series of developments in Washington, D.C. First, the Supreme Court ruled in a double jeopardy case related to gun trafficking, which also tackled a bigger question of Puerto Rico's autonomy.
In this case, we decide whether Puerto Rico and the United States count as separate sovereigns under that doctrine.
The justices ruled that Puerto Rico isn't distinct from the U.S. when it comes to prosecuting crimes. Then the U.S. Congress established that humiliating fiscal review board.
And so this House measure would create a federal oversight board to negotiate with investors to determine how much Puerto Rico will pay them back. That board would also oversee the island's finances. And one House Democrat of Puerto Rican descent says federal oversight board is an assault on the island's sovereignty.
Puerto Rico's economy is already tethered to the U.S. It can only receive imports on U.S.-owned and operated vessels, making goods more expensive. Washington granted tax breaks to companies that invested in Puerto Rico, then took them away, spiking unemployment. To raise money, the Puerto Rican government then turned to bonds. But the island's status meant no taxes could be collected on them, and paying out on the bonds had priority over any other spending. But for many Puerto Ricans, the board appointed in Washington was the last straw that exposed an ugly truth. They were never really free.
There was no doubt that we were a colony.
Gretchen Sierra Zorita.
And I do use the word colony a lot more freely. I thought maybe we should have stickers. You know how they have stickers where you have the outline of the geographic area you're identifying? So the whole island would be in black, and maybe inside in white you would put colony. I actually think it's quite spiffy, but I'm not sure anybody would understand it.
Puerto Ricans were promised that they weren't a colony.
Yarimar Bonilla is a professor at Rutgers University studying the statehood movement in Puerto Rico. She created the website PR Syllabus.
That the ELA was a political status, that was a decolonizing status. The U.S. government has made clear that that's not the case. And this is why there's this movement, Se acabaron las promesas, it's the end of the promises.
On May 1st, thousands marched in San Juan to protest budget cuts and demand an audit of the debt. Online, memes mock public officials and austerity measures, including a parody of the Justin Bieber hit, which lampoons the governor. But it's not always so funny. In Old San Juan, Andres Vera and his wife were visiting from Naranjito, and taking pictures of the black and white protest flag.
Nosotros venimos de una generación donde nos criaron en las escuelas públicas diciéndonos que Puerto Rico era.
He told me they are of a generation where they learned in public school that they lived in an independent territory that was only partially associated with the United States. But they now know that the U.S. Congress wields the real power, which means Puerto Rico is a colony. It was, for them, a sudden revelation.
This has been like a slap in the face.
That's right.
It's a juncture of sadness, uneasiness, and a lot of anxiety.
I visited the offices of Dr. Alfredo Carrasquillo, a psychoanalyst and the head of the Institute for Leadership, Entrepreneurship, and Citizenship at the University of the Sacred Heart in San Juan. He also happens to be married to the mayor.
It is important for Puerto Ricans to put into words what is being felt at this point, to question the narratives that we have used to name and to describe our relationship with the U.S., For most Puerto Ricans, it's a broken promise. A promise that really the U.S. never made, that we built, that we constructed.
How do you deal with that kind of realization, with that kind of slap in the face?
It's tough because it requires us to go through a mourning process. For example, my mother, when the economic crisis was starting, she would always say, oh, Americans will not allow this to get too serious. They will help us. Now she knows that they have not helped us, and that they are not interested. So Puerto Ricans have been confronted with a reality, which is that the U.S. is not what we thought it was. And perhaps for the first time in our history, we have to take charge of our own destiny.
Carrasquillo says part of that narrative that the U.S. would provide was shaped by the mainland's investments on the island, projects to industrialize Puerto Rico and hold it up during the Cold War as a prosperous, capitalist alternative to communist Cuba and the poverty of the rest of Latin America. The Commonwealth meant wealth.
As an example of an underdeveloped land that is going through an industrial revolution without violence and without communism, Puerto Rico has been called a showcase of America.
And the narrative was, if we were able to get to that point with Commonwealth, wonder how much we can get with statehood. So in that sense, yes, the U.S. government invaded Puerto Rico. Yes, they have made decisions here and there, but we are not kidnapped.
But he says it's crucial for the mainland to understand Puerto Rico hasn't just taken, it's given too.
Take, for example, the number of Puerto Ricans that have been killed or who have fought in U.S. wars. The proportion of Puerto Ricans is way bigger than any other states in the U.S. So is that fair? It is up to U.S. citizens in the states to say, hey, Madam Congresswoman, Mr. Congressman, do something about Puerto Rico. Show that we are a democracy and not an empire. There's an identity crisis in the U.S. at stake regarding that. The U.S. wants to operate as the country that sees itself as the democracy of the world, or is it going to be a colonial power?
There is an irony in Puerto Rico regarding democracy. They take voting much more seriously than Americans on the mainland do. It's not unusual for voter turnout to reach 80%, compared with, say, 60% for the U.S. in 2016. Election days are always on holidays or weekends, which is why, when the two minority parties called for a boycott of this recent plebiscite on the island's status, many analysts question whether it would even be possible to keep Puerto Ricans from the polls. And yet, last Sunday, the beaches were packed, and the voter turnout was a historically low 23%. The statehood option won because those were basically the only voters to cast ballots, some wearing American flag t-shirts or lapel pins. It was another confusing plebiscite from Puerto Rico. 5 years ago, an election yielded over 500,000 blank ballots. And in 1998, over half of the voters rejected all options and went for none of the above. I spoke to Yarimar Bonilla, the Rutgers professor, again the day after the plebiscite. She says everybody lost.
The people who support statehood, they lost because this is not a vote that the statehood party can really use in Congress. I mean, we all know that 97% of Puerto Ricans don't support statehood. And I think the people who are claiming victory on the boycott, they actually lost because they have failed to produce another option for Puerto Ricans.
The lack of options seems to be reflected in the lack of adequate words to describe not only what Puerto Rico wants to be, but what it currently is. That's why Bonilla is stuck on the word colony, because Puerto Rico is not a colony in the traditional sense. It comes close, but it doesn't quite capture the reality.
So I feel like people are using it as a kind of placeholder for something that they don't have a fully developed concept for yet, and that perhaps they won't have a concept for it until they've realized what they want to replace it with. I would like a conversation among Puerto Ricans about what they want. What is the relationship that they want with the U.S.? And to forget about the boxes that are offered to us at the plebiscite.
In the end, says psychoanalyst Alfredo Carrasquillo, you have to dispense with the false narratives before you can create something new. It's a daunting undertaking.
So far, what we have done is respond to what others, the Spanish government or the American governments, have decided regarding our history. It's very painful, but it's a beautiful opportunity to be the founders and creators of our own history.
It's said that politics is the national sport of Puerto Rico, but sometimes it seems as though the political parties can't even agree on what game they're playing. Whether it's Team Statehood or Independence or Status Quo, the divisions are so fierce they can't get close enough to scrap. They don't even agree, for instance, on the shade of blue on the Puerto Rican flag. Those pushing independence use a sky blue. Those seeking statehood, the blue of the American flag. Even so, what I heard again and again on the island was that almost everyone is coming around to the word colony. And even if it doesn't quite fit, at least they can agree on that. For On the Media, I'm Alana Casanova Burgess.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, Michael Loewinger, and Leia Fetter. We had more help from Jane Vaughn, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Terrence Bernardo.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.